Okay, everybody, welcome to Festool Shop Talk. This is episode number 17. We're here with Austin from Austin School of Furniture in Austin, Texas. This is beautiful out here. And Austin, why don't you show us inside?
After you.
Thank you. Hey everybody, welcome to Festool Shop Talk. I am sitting down at a workbench with Austin from Austin School of Furniture in Austin, Texas. Man, that is awesome. You can find them at Austin School of Furniture on Instagram, but also austinschoolofurniture.com. Sign up now for classes. Austin, thank you so much for having us here today.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. Welcome to Austin, Texas.
Yeah, man. Got a great coffee, had a great breakfast just around the corner. I'm digging Austin. I guess the number one question I always ask is, tell us a little bit about yourself.
How
did you end up here in this beautiful woodworking mecca here in Austin?
Okay. You want the short version or longer?
Long, please.
Okay. Well, in 1987, so I grew up in Kansas. A lot of people think being named Austin, I'm from Texas. I'm not. No relation to the city in terms of my name, but I grew up in Kansas, and my grandfather was a woodworker. So he had started off as a machinist, and that kind of turned into wood turning, and so he's a big turner. Every Sunday, we would go to my grandfather's house for barbecue and would hang out, and he would let me sweep the shop, and that slowly turned into getting my hands on things and became just a very handy kid.
Yep.
And then that comes into play in college where I was essentially a handyman and would fix, I would like to say I was doing nice carpentry, but being in a college town, it was fixing a door when someone, you know, kicked through it or something like that. You know, whatever needed to happen, that was what I was doing to pay for rent and kind of working my way through college. So I graduated from Kansas State University, which is Manhattan, Kansas, the Little Apple.
Gotcha. I actually went to and taught at a school in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And that was, I don't want to say, I think it was Kansas State. And I call it a gem or a jewel in the Midwest because they taught everything there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was amazing. I spent the week in the wintertime in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
Yeah.
It's cool. Oh, sorry.
No, go.
Sorry to interrupt. Like it. Yeah.
But graduated with a degree in marketing and international business. And at that kind of point, the only thing I was finding job-wise was unpaid internships or customer service, you know, experience roles. So I packed up and I moved to Korea. And I lived in Seoul, Korea for 4 years.
Wow.
So that's a whole nother thing, but I had always had an interest in languages and specifically Asian languages and studied a lot of languages and then did some Taekwondo, which is Korean. And so I studied abroad in Korea and loved it. And then when I couldn't find a job here, said, why not? I'll go teach English for a year. And I loved it so much that I stayed for four. So that's kind of when I fell in love with education as another component of what eventually led me to the school. So marketing, education, I had those components, loved Korea, loved the language, loved the culture. But then a woman brought me back, you know, like most things. So yeah. I moved back to the United States, lived in Colorado for a little bit, then moved to Austin, Texas with my now wife.
Wow.
Was that woman that brought me back. So I loved Korea, but I loved her more, so I came back for her.
Wow.
But it was kind of when I had fallen in love with education, but it's really hard to be in a city like Seoul and do anything with your hands. It's a very metropolitan environment, and it was pretty much all concrete everywhere.
Yeah.
Missed nature, missed working with my hands. Got to do a little bit of that as a teacher where I could do things I wanted to as long as the kids were speaking English, and so that was fun. But came back and really needed to get back into woodworking. And when we moved to Austin, I was actually really disappointed in the woodworking community.
Wow.
There wasn't really a whole lot going on here.
Mm-hmm.
It was very isolated. You had furniture makers right next door to furniture makers that didn't know there was a furniture maker there. There was a club that was very old school, that wasn't great. I went to that and I wasn't really getting the welcoming vibe. So to meet other woodworkers, I started taking classes at the community college. So they have three classes that you could say are furniture making-esque.
Yeah.
But they're woodworking 1, 2, and 3. And that is where I met Philip Morley. So Philip Morley is our lead instructor and one of our owners. And
cool.
Through that, met him, met his mentor that teaches advanced woodworking, Michael Kolka.
Okay.
And then through the students that were in my class, we also started talking about what was lacking in the community. So we started a drinking club with a woodworking program.
Is that one of your logos?
It might as well be, yeah. It is the Woodworking Social Club. So
I love it.
2016, we started a meetup group that's on meetup.com and on Facebook. And that is what it is. We get together twice a month, one north, one south, at a brewery, and talk about woodworking. We drink beer, you bring a project, you bring your phone, whatever you want to show off, and talk about woodworking.
I'm moving to Austin.
So that started while Philip and I were having conversations about what would a furniture school look like. Because ACC, the Austin Community College, is great, but it stops at advanced woodworking. There's not really more you can take. I wanted more classes, I wanted more variety, I wanted to learn different skill sets, I wanted to use different tools, I wanted to learn from different teachers. What would it look like if we started one? So as a business person, I did, you know, a business plan, market research, analysis. Mm-hmm. I used that club as my sounding board for what would you want the first class to be? Would you take this? How much would you pay? What do you want to get out of it? What do you want to make?
How long should it be?
Exactly, exactly. And so we started the beginning of the school from there. But there's one other thing that happened before that. The meetup group and the school are growing, but then we realize, okay, there actually is another meetup group in town, but we didn't know about them. They don't advertise, they don't talk. And there's another one in Wimberley and Dripping Springs. What if we host an event for all the meetup groups?
Oh my goodness.
One meetup group for all of them. And we started this event at a brewery and had a couple hundred people. And it was really, really fun. Couple meetup groups and organizations, turning clubs, things like that. Great. A sawmill asked if they could come. And then there was another couple retailers that wanted to come. And just like, hey, we have a table? Yeah, no problem. We packed the brewery so much that it was one in, one out for a woodworking event, which was really interesting to see that for this really big brewery that normally has these big concerts, that we were such a big event.
Wow.
So, okay, I think we're on to something here. Let's turn this into a real event. So we started officially the Texas Woodworking Festival. So the Texas Woodworking Festival is what is now the school's yearly fundraiser. Yearly is a relative term with COVID, but has been traditionally a yearly event that we put on each year to help raise money for the school. So that was kind of coming into play. And then we started the school in 2018 in a small room in a shared community shop here in South Austin. So 261 square feet was what the school was originally.
Just how many?
261. I measured every square inch of that
place.
Man,
you'd have to go outside to change your mind. That is small.
Yeah, very small, just hand tools, just a couple benches, evening classes, and things grew organically, and we realized, okay, the school also has some really good potential. Let's go up a level and see what we can do. And that the community shop also, their lease was ending, so we moved together to a really big facility, which I recommend you check out while you're here, called the Splinter Group. The Splinter Group is about 22,000 square feet in East Austin. That's furniture makers, metal workers, cobblers, ceramicists, all types of kind of industrial arts, all in one place. But there's about 15, 16 furniture makers there that have their own kind of shops.
Wow.
And so we had our own private space within a larger community space and got set up there. We grew and needed more room. We needed our own space, our own building. And there's a whole bunch of things that then happened over the last couple of years that everybody knows about, but then we eventually came to this facility and expanded into what is now our large facility.
Well, how many square feet you have here?
5,081.
And I'm going to tell you, everybody, you have to come here. This is an amazing facility. We'll have some tour in a few minutes of it. It's incredible. We're sitting in the hand tool room right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm digging these benches. You guys made these benches.
Yep.
It's out of lamb beam.
It's like an LVL beam product.
Yeah, it's really neat.
You can
it's
get cool. several benches out of one of them, and so they're pretty time and cost effective to build your own benches.
And in this room you have 2, 4, 6.
13 benches.
13 benches.
One for the teacher. Yeah, 12
this
students.
Is really a nice. You actually feel at home here, which I'm really digging. Okay, that was a great story. And I don't know if you guys can catch this on the video if you're watching. I'm really dumbfounded because I had no idea of your background. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
I met Philip Morley out at a maker thing we're doing this Friday. And I met him 3 or 4 years ago. And what a great business partner you have.
Yeah.
So we eventually want to do a shop talk with Philip, which is really cool.
Yeah, I was telling the other guys early that Philip had actually been approached several times about starting a school, and he said no. And one of the reasons that it worked out well for us was that we're similar enough but have very different backgrounds where it's very symbiotic. And so we worked well together. And you know, there's a whole nother story about how Phil and I actually met at the community college. He was in a different class as the shop tech, and he called me Matt for about a year. And I really didn't like him. He knows this.
He called
me Matt for about a year. And so I thought he just didn't know my name.
Yeah.
But he was actually calling me Matt because he thought I looked like Matt Kinney.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I was like, okay,
you
well,
do.
A beard, bald, glasses. Yeah. There's a couple million of us out there.
Yeah.
You know, give you a couple weeks and you'd be in that same category. But he called me Matt Kinney for a long time. And then once I finally figured that out, we got more friendly, and I helped him with his YouTube channel. And
I
started building his website and helped him with his marketing for a long time. And so we got together through the business side of things. And then we started talking about the furniture school.
Ah, gotcha. That's why your website is off the hook. Cool. Yeah. I'm sorry. this is fun.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, it's another one of my passions is digital marketing and branding and graphic design and video.
I love your t-shirts. I love your logo. What's that slogan you have on that one out? I'm going to buy it when I get out of here. It's make woodworking weird or something like that.
Yeah, the Texas Woodworking Festival is keep woodworking weird.
Oh, that's a great slogan. I love that. You think of that one?
Well, so in Austin, the slogan is keep Austin weird.
Oh, gotcha.
And if you interview someone from Portland, they'll tell you a different story, but they're wrong. It's not keep Portland weird, but keep Austin weird. So you'll see lots of shirts that's keep coffee weird, keep anything weird. So yes, but I'm not going to take credit for that.
Cool. So you teach a lot of classes here, and you're one of the instructors, right?
Yes, with the caveat that I rarely teach. There's enough going on that I bring in people who are way better at woodworking than I am from around the world to teach. And then I'm running the shop, marketing, organizing the classes, and I usually will assist almost every class.
When I looked at the list of instructors, it seems like you have different, I don't want to say levels of them, but who is your core instructors that teach here on a regular basis? That's what it seemed like to me on your website.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you bring some guest instructors in, right?
Yeah.
Do you and Philip have full-time employees here, or
no,
full-time instructors?
There's actually no full-time employees, including myself. So the school is based up on the instruction side of local teachers, so Austin and the surrounding areas.
Yep.
And they're teaching the weekends, the evening classes, things like that. And they're all amazing. We're really lucky to have so many great teachers in this short area.
And in their bios, the ones I was reading, they all are pretty much professional furniture builders.
Yep.
They have their own businesses, correct?
That's one thing that we really wanted to, I don't know if I'd say differentiate, but make sure that we included was the people who are teaching how to make furniture have done it in a way to support themselves either fully or partially, where they are able to not only explain how to make something, but how are you doing this in an efficient way where you could potentially support yourself and your family.
Right.
And what I have found is when you do it professionally, not only do you know how to make something, but you know how to fix problems and get around issues of problem solving, because you're doing studio custom furniture, you're typically making one and you have to figure out so much to make that one piece. You might make it again eventually, but
yes.
But all that extra stuff of figure out, how do I make a jig to be able to do this?
Yes.
How do I make these legs in a safe way? That skill set, I think, is really what you pick up on from a really great instructor.
I totally agree.
You can know how to make something, but inevitably a student's gonna maybe do something a different way, we'll say, and you have to, how do we fix that?
Yes.
Let's use this as a teaching opportunity of, oh, you cut off your tail or your pin, we can't just glue it back on, how can we fix this? What's a good way to do that?
And I think, this is more of a personal, but I think what a great instructor is, there's a lot of great pros out there, but they don't know how to teach it. They don't know how to properly pass it on, and they don't have the patience for novice woodworkers.
Yeah.
And I think that is what defines a fantastic instructor.
Mm-hmm.
Where, and this will lead to another question, but you could have classes that I have seen, and it's really tough as an instructor if you have all the different levels in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We have somebody who's never picked up a chisel, possibly,
mm-hmm.
and then you have this guy who's been a furniture maker, but he's in there for those little things on how maybe the work is held or how that instructor does something. So the question is going to lead to, in this school, do you know the percentage of maybe professionals coming in for extra education versus just hobbyists?
Yeah, I mean, it's a funnel for sure. There are way more beginners than there are advanced people taking classes. What I have found is typically the professional furniture makers are taking classes with those world-renowned furniture making teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're flying someone in from wherever they might be.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get, you know, we've had classes that were around carving, and there's a professional world-renowned luthier in that class because
yes.
he wants to take a world-renowned carving class. Very amazing woodworker and carver in his own right,
right.
but wanted to take this particular class with that particular instructor. So we try to make most classes approachable to everyone. There are going to be some classes where you really need to know how to use hand tools or know how to mill, because
yes.
we're going to skip that. And we make that obvious on the page. But we offer nights and weekends beginner classes for everybody, short evening classes. We want everybody in Austin to come take a woodworking class at least once and try it out. And then maybe that leads to them taking more.
And it's a cool, I keep saying this, but it's a cool vibe here. I want to take a class with you.
We try to make it a bit of an experience. If you're here for a week-long class, we cater lunches. We'll go out for beer, we'll go out for live music.
Oh, you got me, got me a beer.
Yeah, why not? After class.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Always. So have you seen this, and I kind of know the answer to this, but have you seen somebody come in, and when I was looking at the page first, I was kind of going, oh my God, that's from February to April. And I went, oh, and then I clicked on it, and it's one night a week, and it's the
yep.
beginning woodworking
one. Yeah, 10 weeks long.
10 weeks long.
Yeah.
That's fantastic,
yeah.
right? Have you ever seen somebody come into that class, Austin, and go, I want to take more, but go on to a professional career in
mm-hmm.
woodworking?
Yeah.
In furniture building?
Yeah. Yeah, so that class, the fundamentals, is part of a series of classes. So you have fundamentals, and you have furniture making one, furniture making two, three, and so on.
Gotcha.
So we're bringing all those back. Those kind of paused during the pandemic, but the idea was that you could just keep going in this series of classes
perfect.
And still keep your day job. That's the difference. And so even in those evening classes, you could become a very competent furniture maker.
Mm-hmm.
But there are several people who have taken those that now are really, really competent hobbyists mm-hmm. at their own shops. We have a couple People that I know have gone on to apprenticeships. They've gone on to other schools to take some of their intensive classes. Wow. And things like that. So yeah, definitely there's a lot of furniture makers out there that are slowly starting to come into their own. Sweet. From taking our classes. I think we're still in our infancy in terms yeah. of, you know, all these amazing furniture makers that came through the school, but you know, eventually we'll get there.
That is so unbelievable. What is your usual class size? I mean, I would imagine it varies from like when a very intensive class, but also a beginner's class. But yep. let's just talk about a beginner class on a Tuesday night, say.
Sure.
How many people you usually get?
So we can go up to 12. And the difference being not necessarily the maximum in the class, but how many assistants we would have in the class. So I like a 1-to-6 ratio.
Yeah.
If the class is complex, we may even add a second assistant. So generally it's never gonna be more than one teacher and 6 students. If we go up to 12, there's an assistant. If it's complex, you may have 2 assistants where it's still a really good ratio in terms of the one-on-one learning you can be. One of the aspects that I will always promote for any school's in-person classes above literature and videos mm-hmm. is having your own technique critiqued.
Yes.
Try holding the chisel a little bit different this way.
Yep.
Try sawing this way. Yeah. Those are where you really start to become a really good furniture maker, as opposed to reading every book that's out there and being very competent knowledge-wise, which is good. You need to do that.
Uh-huh.
But you got to build the muscle memory. And if you're building bad muscle memory, then you have to work even harder. So good assistants are just as important as good teachers.
Absolutely.
And that is kind of our track into getting new teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So Amanda Russell, who is Philip's apprentice.
Yeah, and I think she's Sawdust Woman?
Yes.
On Instagram.
Yeah, assistant getting into teaching.
Yep.
Michelle Myers is assistant getting into teaching.
Wow.
Alex Lone, who's a furniture maker over at Splinter Group, assisted, and he's a furniture maker.
Yeah.
Who, if you can go over and see some of his work eventually, it's pretty cool.
Wow.
And so that's also, how do we get people in Austin to start teaching when they've never taught before?
Yeah.
Well, you have them partnered up with a really good teacher and they get that experience of
wow.
problem solving and teaching. And we incorporate, it's a bit of an assistant class too, because we ask them to present mm-hmm. for about 10 minutes every class.
Yep.
Could be grain direction, it could be glues or sandpapers. Just get in front of the class and just talk. Teach us something, 10 minutes. And by the end of this, they've done it 3 or 4 times. They're ready to start teaching.
I met a person one time. He said, why should I go to the school? He goes, I'm not gonna catch anything from that. And I looked at him, I was dumbfounded. I go, my parents taught me, you can learn something from every person on this planet.
Yeah.
So draw back about 15, 16, 20 years ago, I was in a class, a weekend class, with somebody I had read his book. His name is Garrett Hack.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote the Hand Blame book. And I love telling this story because at the end of the class, he came up to me. It was for a guild, Self-Forward Workers Guild. And he came up and he said, hey, you know a lot about hand planes. I just found out. And I go, yeah. He goes, what did you learn from me? He goes, they say you know as much as me. I go, I do not know as much as you. So he goes, what did you learn? And it was after a couple of beers.
Yeah.
I said, the way you were holding your work on the bench.
Yeah.
And he goes, what do you mean? I go, I realized I was doing certain things correctly that my grandfather had taught me. But also, it's the way it's done.
Yeah.
But you had a couple other things that I noticed, and I was like, he went, wow. And it was almost epiphanal to him, because he said, that's really cool. Because he was just, I think back then, he was just getting into teaching.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. He's wrote a great book.
Yeah.
You get that book here?
We might have it up there.
Okay.
Yeah. I also have some at home. I usually will take some home, bring some back. It's kind of my own personal library to exchange. But yeah, in a different perspective
yes.
is
yes.
always worth learning.
Always.
So we always try to have new instructors that are coming in mm-hmm. that they could teach the same class, but they're gonna do it a different way. And you could still learn something.
Oh, yeah.
Different way of marking, different way of laying out,
yes.
different way of cutting the joinery. Well, I do it on this way. And there's lots of ways to do it. There's
yeah.
no, I mean, there's probably some wrong ways to do things, but for the most part, there's lots of ways to get there that are the right way.
Yeah, for sure. It's just so interesting. I keep going back to your library. these guys behind the scenes, it's Chris and Derek. It's just funny because they know how much I love woodworking texts and books. And with the birth of YouTube and everybody's on YouTube and learning from a lot of pros out there, because there's some good pro videos out there. When you're, you have a 3-month intensive class.
Yep.
Okay. And in that, do you recommend certain texts? Or is there, is there a text for it? Is there certain areas to go see videos? Is there, and what are the number one texts that you recommend?
So as part of their class, they are getting 10 digital textbooks. So I try to be as paperless as I can.
Yeah.
They're also much more affordable for us. So they get the Fine Woodworking 10, I don't remember what the series is called, the 10 Illustrated Guides to Woodworking. So there's a whole bunch of books, and it's covering hand tools, machines, sharpening, and there's kind of an, each book is covering kind of a segment of that. So they get all of those that they will have. And we have gone through those textbooks and pulled segments out for a reading list that they have. So they have a kind of a weekly schedule, and this is what we want them to read by this particular day. And I have found, like I said, reading gives you that foundation to then ask really good questions. So, hey, in the textbook, the teacher said, do this. Why did they say to do that? Oh, well, that's because of this. So having students that are educated as they come in gives more opportunity to educate while they're here. So they do have homework, reading homework that they have to do. But there is one series of books that I like. Tay Freed is a really good group of books. Is it just woodworking? I can't remember what the name of the books are, but you just look up his books. There's three of them.
Unbelievable. And I think those are on Taunton as well.
Okay, yeah.
And just, oh, I would have loved to have met him.
Yeah.
I heard he was a wicked character. Yeah, he is. And you hear the stories after he passed from his people who worked with him in his shop, how he would come down from the shop, from the house, and turn on the bandsaw to cut pork chops.
Yeah.
Just a real character. And I go, I think I need another bandsaw.
There you go.
But that's a great recommendation.
Yeah.
Free.
I like books of people that I've met. And I think that's always fun to have met someone. And then you start to read their books and you get more perspective. I was lucky enough to meet Jim Tolpin when I was up in the Northwest. And so I have a lot of his books. And he was...
He's got a good school.
I had reached out to Port Townsend thinking, okay, I'll get... you know, an assistant that would show me around, and he answered my email and was like, yeah, just come by and I'll give you a tour. And so it was really exciting for me to get walked around to this whole school on this base and everything and gorgeous structures with Jim Tolpin.
Where they filmed? Officer and a Gentleman.
Okay, yeah. I can see that.
It's really a... Okay, if you're watching, has anybody ever been to Port Townsend, Washington? It's a little heaven on earth. And it's where they filmed Officer and Gentleman. And that is, I always mess up his last name, but his business partner there is John Makovich. I always say Makovich, but Mackleworth or something. And just, he's the guy who gave me the tour. And nicest guy. You want to go there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a neat place. Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, I do like reading books of people I've met.
Yeah.
I met, do you know who Eric Gorgeous is?
The name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he's been on Festool Shop Talk, and he owns Voodoo Choppers.
Okay.
And he's the guy who started the Craftsman's Legacy.
Okay. Yeah.
And I met him one time, and I just went, I think I know you. And he goes, I know you. I see all your videos. I'm just like, what? Then all of a sudden I went, oh snap! My wife loves you, jokingly, right? And the Craftsman's Legacy. I always mess this up. It's just a great PBS, and it's on YouTube now.
Yeah.
And he talks to all these people. He has got such a curious personality. Mm-hmm. That he likes to interview people in any trade there is, and people who work with their hands. Mm-hmm. And just a neat guy and a great woodworker. But he sent me his book, and it gives you a different perspective of him afterwards, how he started it, and some of the trials and tribulations he went through.
Yeah.
That's what I don't think you get all the time when you meet somebody and it's just a verbal conversation. I'm a text fanatic. I love the printed word. Okay, enough about me.
I have to ask. I want to take this class.
Sure.
It's Post and Beam. How the heck did this come about? This is wicked.
Yeah, this is a 5-day class. So we'll be doing it again in February.
Wow.
The teacher's Patrick Moore from Canada.
Yeah.
And the students cut this both with machines and by hand. They're cutting the joinery. They're laying out the angles. They prefab things inside the shop. And then we bring it all out here and erect it. So every year we find a different location. We were lucky enough this year that we're keeping the structure.
Wow.
Next year it's a really fancy greenhouse. So yeah, you definitely can come back and take this.
Oh man, I'm all in. I think I'm coming back for the Texas
Woodworking Festival.
Woodworking Festival. Okay, I got another question. I'm like a little kid here. Is this a class? Or wow, this is nice.
Nope, that's just a bench that I designed. It goes with these.
I love it.
Makes a full circle around a fire pit.
Wow.
Real simple.
Man, this is just a little piece of heaven.
Yeah.
Right here in Austin. Okay, I gotta ask. All right. I'm looking at the ends here. How the heck did you cut those?
Yeah, so we prefabbed the roof structure inside the garage, and they're all different lengths, but we wanted to make sure they're even. If we were thinking, we would have had one long track.
Yeah.
But we actually hooked together multiple students' Festool tracks together and had one track across the whole thing and ran our track saw across the thing.
That's awesome. So they do use Festool here. So we just walked in from outside and I said, time out. I got to ask. I know the answer to this, but Austin, this is awesome. And you show people how to build sawhorses. I think this is one of the greatest beginner projects mm-hmm. out there because now you have a fixture for the shop.
Sure, sure.
So could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to unpack in a set of these sawhorses. So this particular style is from James Kronoff. You're milling.
Yep.
You're learning all the tools, the tool safety. You're starting to get into specific dimensions. So you're working with different lengths, different thicknesses, different widths. And then you're starting off with what I think is kind of the bread and butter of joinery, the mortise and tenon.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all integral mortise and tenons.
Look at that.
And then you have a through wedged mortise and mm-hmm. tenon. And they're learning all the machines, including routers, to make those. And the reason why we picked this along with another project that they do in that first class is that we found that beginners focus too much on perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's perfect. And we specifically don't want people to be perfect when they're starting off. Focus on the basics, the fundamentals. Be safe. Make correct cuts. Measure twice. Cut once. Don't worry about, you know, chamfering the edges
right.
and sanding this. There's time for that when you get into the furniture. So we don't want people to focus on perfection. So we do a toolbox and a set of sawhorses.
Yeah.
You now have shop furniture and a place to store your tools. You yep. can work at home. But we want them to focus on the basics, not making something that's striving for perfection. So the next class up, then they start to make some really nice furniture.
Way cool, man. I just think that's one of the greatest first projects out there mm-hmm. is
definitely
a sawhorse. The other thing I used to do all the time, and I hear people calling it now or calling it out, I don't focus, when I haven't cut a dovetail in years,
mm-hmm.
I always cut a series of what I call a burn box, or what I've heard
okay.
people call a burn box.
Yeah.
You gotta get that muscle memory back
yep.
when you're hand cutting dovetails. And these guys will attest at my home shop, I have a bunch of dovetails that I'm getting back into hand cutting, but I have to practice because you kind of
sure.
lose some of that muscle memory.
Yeah, yeah.
Just be willing to just practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think this is a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, it's even a fun thing to, you know, when you're just starting off, cut a few of those, keep one or two of them, and
yeah.
it'll give you a better perspective of how far you've come
yeah.
years down the line when you're a professional furniture maker.
Yeah. I always ask at Festool if we could come out with a saw, a power saw that can replicate hand cut dovetails. You know, that'd be kind of fun, like a power handsaw. There's not one coming out, but I think we should come out with one.
Okay, there you go.
Cool. Hey, Austin, I got a quick one for you. I know we were back over by the sawhorses earlier. What? You were saying and I agree, the meat and potatoes are joinery, I think, and it's a great thing. It teaches a lot of skills. It's the mortise and tenon.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have a
Domino. Do you teach the Domino here?
We do. Yeah.
The Domino joiner from Festool.
Yeah. So what we use the Domino for is pretty project specific. There are things the Domino does that are just better than any tool. You need a Domino for this particular operation, and that's what we'll use those Dominoes for. We want to give students the tools to be able to, not tangible tools, but the tool skill set to be able to make something in multiple ways. So we'll teach them three or four ways to do a mortise and tenon.
Correct.
When it comes to loose tenons, we'll show them three or four ways. Usually then it comes to, okay, now we're gonna do the actual project, that's when we pull out the Domino.
Oh.
We don't want students to feel like you can't make furniture unless you buy A, B, and C.
Right.
There's lots of ways to do that.
Yes.
I start off with a really small 6-inch joiner, a benchtop joiner,
mm-hmm.
and you work up as you go.
Oh, smart.
That's fine, yeah. But there are things that you start to figure out, okay, this is why it's Festool. It's like, it's really good. It really works. It's very accurate. That's what you want those types of tools for.
Correct.
And so when we have these project classes that are designed by a professional furniture maker,
mm-hmm.
they have to kind of balance, this is how I make it in my shop. Now I have to figure out how to teach it to 10 or 12 people. And some of those things we can use other machines for. Some are like, yeah, let's just use a couple Dominoes for this. And so we use it all the time in our classes, but we want to make sure we show people multiple ways to do things.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So obviously we've been talking a lot about woodworking and the nuts and bolts, you know, joinery, the different classes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something I truly believe that is so important, and I want you, if possible, elaborate on a simple question. Who here teaches design? Because I think that is so important mm-hmm. to have that eye trained for design.
Sure. It's not one person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really important. When one person is teaching design, they're usually teaching their design.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Philip Morley's furniture. We don't want to create a bunch of Philip Morleys. One Philip Morley is enough. We're good.
Gotcha.
So he teaches design in his classes, but generally we try to incorporate all different aspects of design from 3D modeling to drafting. So one of our board members, Mark Maychek, is a furniture maker. He comes from the architectural side, teaches a lot of design aspects. He teaches design history as well.
Oh, cool.
Then we have drafting. Leslie Webb used to teach drafting. Now Evan Court is teaching our drafting classes.
Leslie taught here?
Yeah, yeah. So Leslie used to live up in Georgetown, or still is.
Oh my God.
Up in Georgetown.
Her design is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So she was teaching one of the very first classes that was in that really small space, and it was a drafting class.
Wow.
Yeah.
Too
and
cool.
Then we'll do aspects of 3D modeling where David Heim, who's actually up in Connecticut, teaches SketchUp. So we do that one online. That's one of our regular courses that's always online because you're on your computer anyways.
Right.
And then we're bringing in Sarah Watlington to teach scale modeling, prototyping. So we're getting crafty and working with cardboard and things like that.
Wow.
Michael Fortune has taught design classes for us. So anything from old school drafting to Fusion 360, we try to find someone that's really good at that one particular thing so people can take little a la carte chunks of woodworking design. The 3-month program is where they're gonna learn a lot more. They're learning the principles of design, drafting, 3D modeling, critiquing of their own designs by Mark, who's mm-hmm. gonna kind of give an architectural class critique, mm-hmm. and they'll start to change aspects of the furniture as they go. So they're gonna get a full kind of breadth of design in that class. But otherwise, we do a little bit of everything, and you can kind of grab those chunks of design as you want.
Cool. So I know you're a furniture builder. Is there a particular style or genre of furniture that you enjoy building that you kind of go to?
Yeah, good question. I'm probably somewhere in between a minimal Japanese design
mm-hmm.
starting to get into Scandinavian, so a bit of the Danish modern, but simple curves, nice arcs, nothing too crazy, a focus on the wood, mm-hmm. which I think the Japanese do really well, really good kind of focus on the aspects that matter. Not that the other aspects don't matter, but what I like is simple, very nice furniture. It's going to last a long time.
I think everybody knows because of the podcast, I go towards a Shaker, and uh-huh. there's a lot of similarities yeah. in that. It's you just look at it, it's a beautiful design. A lot of people go, yeah, 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 but there's a lot of good joinery in there,
yep.
and that's what I enjoy. So that's cool. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Shaker makes for great classes as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, Austin, we were chatting offline for a few minutes, and you said there's another website out there where you offer online videos?
Yeah, yeah. So AustinSchoolOfFurniture.online was something that we kind of created during the down period, during the pandemic, to house our pre-recorded video classes. So we would take a project with an instructor and record video of that project, how to build it, comes with plans and measurements, written instructions, and 5, 10, 15 videos, whatever it may be, about a particular project, from small boxes to different children's rocking chairs. It could be a little bit of everything. So that we've found that although our bread and butter is the in-person classes, that there are good opportunities with reading books, obviously. Mm-hmm. We don't have any books out yet, but maybe recorded video classes, kind of high production, and then live online classes. So we'll do lecture-based things of furniture design, history classes, SketchUp classes, different types of more computer-friendly type things that you could do across the United States or the world at that point. Those things then open up doors to larger classes, to people that can't make it all the way here, so it's a little bit more accessible. And I think it's just part of that learning process to have multiple facets to how you're learning woodworking.
Very cool. And that's, once again?
AustinSchoolOfFurniture.online.
Austin, from Austin School of Furniture in Austin, Texas. I just love that. It's so perfect. I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah.
You've got such a giving spirit. I hope Austin appreciates it. I think they do. And in this podcast, I was so impressed to understand how you and Austin School of Furniture have brought the community together here in Austin, Texas. So from Festool family, thank you very much, Austin. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
You betcha.
Yeah.